From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Today, we continue our conversations with Iowa candidates in advance of the midterms. We hear from two challengers. In the first half hour, we'll talk with Democrat Bill Mask, who is running against Congressman Tom Latham, a Republican who has been representing Iowa's 4th Congressional District since 1995. Bill Mask has been a professional educator for over 30 years. Then in the second half hour, a conversation with Democrat Matt Campbell, who is trying to unseat four-term Republican Congressman Steve King in Iowa's 5th District. That's all coming up. First, a look at the news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we continue our conversations with Iowa candidates in advance of the midterms. We hear today from two challengers. In the second half hour, a conversation with Democrat Matt Campbell, who is trying to unseat four-term Republican Congressman Steve King in Iowa's 5th District. Joining me now live for the first half hour, Democrat Bill Mask, a professional educator for over 30 years. He's running against Congressman Tom Latham, a Republican who has been representing Iowa's 4th Congressional District since 1995. By the way, the 4th District covers most of northern Iowa, extends also into central Iowa, including the cities of Ames and Fort Dodge. I want to mention that Congressman Latham declined our invitation to be on this program. We're very happy to have Democrat Bill Mask with us to discuss some of the issues. Bill Mask, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Let's start by talking about the Bush tax cuts. You support extending the Bush tax cuts for all but the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Why do you support extending the tax cuts for some but not all?
Well, the people in this in society that are hurting are those who are in the lower and middle incomes. And the fact is, Ben, that this Great Recession is only rivaled in terms of an economic crisis by the Great Depression back in the 20s and early 30s. And we need to help people who are hurting. We're looking at we need to create jobs for people. We need to increase the real average wage in this country so that we create a consumer base and build our economy from the ground up. We need to invest in small business. We need to invest in have a serious investment in renewable energy. And we need to have a federal works program to address our crumbling infrastructure and put people to work. And that is what I believe we need to do. My opponent, on the other hand, still believes in trickle-down economics. And as most of us believe, that's a myth and nothing ever seems to trickle down.
Well, let me represent a small business owner who says something like, well, I may be worth quite a bit on paper, but much of that wealth is tied up in my business. Shouldn't I get a tax break if we know that small businesses create the majority of jobs?
Well, the fact is, and my opponent misrepresented this on Iowa Public Television, is that that tax break is on your actual income. It has nothing to do with the money and investment that you have and put into your business. And so if you are amongst the 2% wealthiest in this country, then I'm in favor of eliminating that tax break. But again, that's on your income, which is generally $250,000 or more, and again, has nothing to do with the finances that are used to run your business or invest in your business.
Democrat Bill Mask is my guest for this first half hour. If you have a question for him, he's challenging Congressman Tom Latham in Iowa's 4th District. Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. Your questions, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. We know that the Troubled Asset Relief Program, known commonly as TARP, was fairly unpopular with voters, Bill Mask. In fact, it led to the birth of the Tea Party. This was the program to purchase assets and equity from financial institutions to strengthen the financial sector. Originally expected to cost $356 billion. We had good news recently most recent final net estimate of the cost, something close to $30 billion. Would you have voted for the TARP legislation?
Well, Ben, in the very beginning, I too had reservations about that piece of legislation. But the fact of the matter is the evidence, the proof is in the pudding. And the American Recovery and Relief Act has had a very positive effect for the economy. It has saved millions of jobs. If it was not for that piece of legislation, unemployment in this country would be through the roof, even more than it is now. And
so why aren't these programs more popular with voters? They don't have a good name out there.
Well,
effective spin by their opponents?
Well, there's certainly more than enough politicizing going on, Ben. And it seems that the party of no, and my opponent Tom Latham is a member of that party, which has been working hard to obstruct the initiatives that have been put forth by the Obama administration and the Democrats. And they have no desire whatsoever to have that legislation look like it's been successful. But the fact of the matter is, and people who are paying attention know that the American Recovery and Relief Act indeed is having a positive impact.
You mentioned a few moments ago a litany of investments that you think should be made in this country and in Iowa. But people who are perhaps opposed to the programs we just talked about really worry that the government should not continue spending to boost the economy when we know that spending is contributing to this enormous federal deficit. How do you answer those fears, those concerns?
Well, I think we're all concerned about that enormous federal deficit, and that definitely needs to be addressed. But the fact is, right now, we need to restore the health of the economy. If we do not restore economic health in this country, it's going to be very difficult to address the issue of the deficit. And so in this recession, to bring us out of this recession, we have to put people to work. That's the first part of the equation. The second part of the equation is we must increase the real average wage in this country. The real average wage, Ben, has not increased in the United States for 40 years, with other than it's been increased for inflation. But as far as that, the real average wage has remained stagnant. We need to put people to work, increase the real average wage, build the economy from the base up. We restore the economic health of the country. We can deal with the deficit.
Since you are a professional educator, have been in this profession for many years, over 30 years, 34 years, I believe. Let's talk a little bit about that. And in fact, I see that you began your educational career as a teacher, a coach, and athletic coordinator at the American School in Tehran, Iran, in 1975. That would have been right before the Iranian Revolution.
Well, I was there from 75 to 77, and so the Iranian Revolution occurred, in 78, 79. So the proximity was fairly close.
Mm-hmm. You want to repeal No Child Left Behind. Why?
Well, No Child Left Behind is a good concept. In fact, no one believes more in the fact that we should not leave any child behind than I do. But as far as public policy is concerned, No Child Left Behind has failed public policy. It has lost its credibility with educators here in Iowa, and I'm sure across the nation. We need to recognize when we do things, if they're not working, that we need to undo them. In this case, we need to rescind No Child Left Behind, step back, and engage a new partnership between the federal government and states.
So how do we do that? If we didn't have No Child Left Behind, how do we hold teachers accountable for the job they're doing in the classroom without some measure of student performance? How do we address failing schools?
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to look at education from a few different lenses. One thing we need to do is we need to make sure that we have world-class brick and mortar and supplies, equipment, technology. We need to make sure that we provide those substances for our children to be educated. The second thing we need to do is we need to have world-class teachers in the classroom. But the federal government's not going to do that from a distance. That has to be done from the proximity of the local school working with their state. Then the state can work with the federal government in which to act as a clearinghouse, disseminate research, best practice about what works in educating kids, because there's no such thing out there, Ben, as a cookie cutter approach to education. And so the federal government can partner with the states, help provide the resources. We need a lot more funds in education to ensure that we're giving our children that world-class education that we want for all of them.
Democrat Bill Mask is with us for this first half hour. He is running against Congressman Tom Latham, Republican representing Iowa's 4th Congressional District. If you'd like to join our conversation with a question for Bill Mask, 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. The 4th District of Iowa has a lot of agriculture. Bill, of course, what are your thoughts on farm subsidies, a possible reform of farm subsidies?
Well, I think we need a new farm bill, and we're going to get one in 2012. Subsidies need to be reformed. Farmers, our family farmers, need to have a safety net. That's what subsidies were originally intended to be, and I support that wholeheartedly. However, when subsidies become a bonus, as they have in the last few years, then I think we need to step back and look at how we run our subsidies and how they're determined, mm-hmm. how they're allocated.
How do you do that so that these subsidies are not going to the large interests that don't need them, but still going to smaller producers? I gather you're in favor of the smaller, more independent farms.
Sure. I believe in sustainable agriculture. I think it's a shame that we have went from something like 56,000 family farms in Iowa like 40 years or 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And today we have something like 11,000 family farms. And of course, Ben, how do we define a family farm? To me, a family farm is a farm that's owned by the family and it is operated and run and worked by the family. And if we look around Iowa and we look at our rural communities and what's happened, I think we all would be in agreement that we need to move away from the industrial model of agriculture and move back towards a model in which we have family farms and a more sustainable approach to agriculture.
One of the egg companies involved in this recall over this summer, Wright County Egg, is located in the 4th District. What, if any, reforms do you believe are needed to address the recent salmonella outbreak? Do we need more regulations in agricultural production or just resources to enforce those regulations that already work or already are on the books?
Sure. Well, me and my opponent, Tom Latham, we disagree on this. And he wants to point the finger at the FDA and claim that they weren't doing their job. But the fact of the matter is he's been there 16 years, Ben. He's been part of the problem. They've been deregulizing all of the industries. And so through deregulation, and then they've been downsizing during the Bush years from 2000 to 2006, when the administration was Republican, the Congress was Republican, they've been downsizing. By 2007, the FDA had 12% less employees than they did before that. It's a combination, deregulation and downsizing. And again, my opponent, he falls in line with industrial agriculture, and he certainly is good at pointing fingers, but he's been there 16 years. He's part of the problem.
Anyone who has driven through the 4th District of Iowa up in the northern part of the state knows that this is one of the parts of the state where we get a lot of benefit from wind farms, huge wind farms in the 4th District, Bill Mask. Do you happen to know how many wind turbines there are there in that district? Any idea? I don't.
I couldn't tell you the total number. What I can tell you is that early on last spring, I took time, went up to Iowa Lakes Community College, visited the wind turbine program that they have there. It is a marvel to see, and certainly I believe wholeheartedly that wind is one of our alternative sources of energy that we need to continue to pursue.
Any differences there between on wind energy and how to promote it? how Iowa could become an exporter of wind energy between you and your opponent, Tom Lathan?
Well, there's no doubt that there's a big difference. I truly would support, as a member of Congress, what would be a commitment to renewable energy and renewable and clean fuel, similar to our commitment to put a man on the moon. We need that kind of national commitment to do that. On the other hand, my opponent gives lip service to the idea of renewable energy, but if you look at his voting record, he voted no on the Clean Energy Act, which would have pumped more money into renewable energy, and he's voted no on other legislation that would be supportive of renewable energy. So he might say one thing, but he's certainly done another. And he's a friend of big agriculture, of industrial agriculture. He's also a friend of big oil.
While we're on the topic of energy and the environment, the U.S. has yet to pass comprehensive legislation to address climate change. You do not support cap and trade, I see. Why not?
Well, I support standards to reduce carbon emissions. We need to reduce carbon emissions, global greenhouse gases, by 80% by the year 2050. What I don't agree with is I don't agree with the cap and trade process. I believe cap and trade is too much of a financial boondoggle. It's got the middleman in there. I'm very concerned that it would be prone to corruption and to manipulation, which would in the end not result in the kind of carbon emission reduction we need to see. And but as far as standards on the reduction of carbon emissions, I believe wholeheartedly we need to have that.
Now, the war in Afghanistan is in its 10th year, and you have a difference there with your opponent as well in terms of your position on the war in Afghanistan. Tell us about that.
Well, I first want to applaud President Obama for moving our troops out of Iraq. It's now we need to move our troops out of Afghanistan. And I love our troops. I love our veterans. I am wholeheartedly behind them. If we throw our young people, our young men and women into harm's way as a government, we must stand behind them in every way possible. But as far as Iraq or Afghanistan is concerned, we've not clearly defined a mission. So how will we know when we can say mission accomplished? We've been chasing the Taliban and Al-Qaeda all over the place. They've gone to Yemen. They've gone to Somalia. They've gone to Pakistan. And are we going to chase them there? I don't think that is what we need to be doing. And so I think it's time to bring our troops home.
So President Obama's timeline for a drawdown in Afghanistan is not soon enough for you. You want to get out right now.
Yes, I do.
You think it would be safer for the U.S., and it has to do with national security here. That's why we got in, of course, for that country to predictably devolve into some chaos or allow the Taliban to return to power.
Well, I believe we need to turn Afghanistan back over to the Afghanis, and they need to
take... Yeah, but which Afghanis, the Taliban or the government that we are supporting?
Well, I think we need to turn it back over to the government that we're supporting, and we need to expect them and let them take care of that security issue. Mm-hmm. We're seen as an invading force in Afghanistan.
Well, what do you say to the families who have lost a serviceman or woman, injured, and all of the resources that this country has put into Afghanistan for over 10 years?
Mm-hmm. I have the utmost pride, honor, love, and affection for all our servicemen, for those that have made the ultimate sacrifice. My heart goes out to them. My thanks goes out to them for their service. But, Ben, we've been there, like you say, 10 years. And when we reach a point where it's time to come home, we need to come home. To simply stay there because we've been there 10 years is not a good reason.
This will be the first election in which the newly launched Tea Party movement figures. What are your thoughts about the Tea Party? Running into any Tea Party activists while campaigning in the 4th District?
I have not. But I believe the Tea Party certainly has their right to have their positions and to make their case. I just happen to disagree with them on just about every issue that they have. And they're there, and hopefully the public, what I hope the public does, Ben, is they reach out to become educated in this election. Learn about what I stand for. Learn about what my opponent, Tom Latham, stands for. When it comes to the economic crisis, Tom Latham's trickled down. When it comes to energy, he still wants to drill, baby, drill. And he has no vision for renewable energy. When it comes to the environment, he doesn't believe global warming is real. And he's aligned with industrial agriculture, which is spoiling our water and ruining our land. He wants to get rid of the Department of Education. And he has voted no on reducing loans for college students. And he's voted no on the Perkins, or the direct Perkins loans. He would rescind health care.
Let's talk about that quickly. We have about 2 minutes left. The health care reform passed by the democratically controlled Congress, signed into law by President Obama. When you name it as one thing, not entirely popular. Some aspects seem to have quite a bit of popularity. How would you have voted on the health bill reform?
Well, I wasn't happy with the way it all came about, but I would have been, in the end, I would have voted for it. All social change has to start somewhere in this country. It's always been an evolutionary process. It's a good beginning, but we still have a lot of work to do.
Approval ratings for leaders of both parties in Congress matching all-time lows. What would you do to cultivate a different political culture?
Well,
back and forth.
No, absolutely. That's where, again, I disagree with my opponent. I think it's almost humorous. My opponent now wants to sound like he's a real bipartisan type of guy and he's going to reach across the aisle, but he sure hasn't in 16 years. So, you know, why would he start doing it now? I think it's important to sit down with people. I've done that all my life as an educator. You sit down with people, you put things on the table, you collaborate, you have conversations, and you keep your eye on the fact that it's not about you, it's about the people you serve, and then you come up with good ideas and good solutions to the issues we face.
We've been hearing a lot about anger in this election cycle. Are you hearing any anger out there in the campaign trail?
Well, I don't hear so much anger as much as I hear a lot of frustration with what's going on in Washington, and a lot of frustration with incumbents. And I believe that when it comes to the incumbent in the 4th Congressional District, the voters are absolutely right. He's been there too long. It's time to give him a break, send him home, let him have a rest. And let's put someone in Congress from the 4th Congressional District who truly understands what public service is about and who cares about families and children and hardworking men and women.
Bill Mask, Democrat, running against Congressman Tom Latham, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben. It's been a pleasure.
Bill Mask running against Tom Latham, a Republican who has been representing Iowa's 4th Congressional District since 1995. We want to mention again that Congressman Latham declined our invitation to be on this program and express his views. Coming up in just a moment on The Exchange, a conversation with Democrat Matt Campbell. He is trying to unseat four-term Republican Congressman Steve King of Iowa's 5th District. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. I recently spoke with Matt Campbell. He's the Democratic Party's nominee, challenging Republican Congressman Steve King in Iowa's 5th District. King declined our invitation to be on this program. I began my conversation with Matt Campbell by asking him about his priorities for this race.
I feel like this is a jobs election. I have said many times on the campaign trail there's three issues, and it's jobs, jobs, jobs. People are very concerned about the state of the economy. It's affecting personal household finances all across the state. And in the 5th District, there's a number of smaller rural communities that need some assistance, that have too many empty storefronts on Main Street, factories that over a decade have closed down or relocated. And, you know, when you see that kind of problem in the district, I think it's something that calls for the representative to be strongly involved in.
Mm-hmm. A jobs election. You see it as a jobs election. I don't think you'll get much disagreement there. Why do you think this priority gives you the ability to unseat Representative King?
Well, there's a number of other issues. I do focus on jobs, but there are stark differences between myself and current Representative King on Social Security, on tax policy as well. But with respect to economic development, I think people like the ideas that I have on that issue. I have been saying that the job isn't just, as a representative, just voting the right way in Washington, D.C., and I think that Representative King has voted wrongly on a whole host of issues and has not been particularly productive since he's been there, and he's been there for quite some time, 8 years. But beyond that, what I've been talking about has appealed to folks on the other side because I'm talking about a lot of things that we can do in the private sector as a facilitator. There mm-hmm. are tremendous amounts of government programs that are out there that the representative's office could do a better job of sharing that information with the district. Additionally, I have been advocating I would like, if elected, to establish something I call Iowa's 5th District Fast Tech 50, and that simply would be to work with community organizations all throughout the 5th District to annually identify the 50 fastest growing businesses. And I really would work with these groups and have them receive information that businesses could choose to provide or not based on audited financial statements, and a tabulation can be made, and that information can be put out in the public. And the benefit of just simply putting that information out there is that a lot of our young people, or really anybody that's looking for a good opportunity or a good job, will know where those opportunities are. I think there's quite a bit of lack of information from the district's quite broad, say from Spencer all the way down to Lamona. I was in Spencer here recently, and a couple businesses told me they have trouble finding enough people. I said, shoot, wouldn't it be great if we could share that information, throughout the district somehow, through a website to some sort of economic development link.
You mentioned that Representative King has voted the wrong way, in your opinion, in several issues. I want you to name an issue, a vote or two, which you think is not only, in your opinion, wrong, but something that the constituents of your 5th district would disagree with.
Well, let's start with Wall Street reform. The economy almost went off a cliff due to the prior administration's mismanagement of the economy. I don't see how when the Wall Street almost imploded that as a representative you can vote against Wall Street reform after that, yet he did. There's a website out there called themiddleclass.org that ranks Representative King or gives him a voting record of an F on issues that positively affect the middle class. Some of these topics are the pieces of legislation, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, the legislation that called for the regulation of tobacco. Things like this I would have voted for as a representative. I also think he's part of the crowd that wants to raise the full retirement age of Social Security to age 70 or reduce benefits. And I would strongly fight those efforts because I think most of us know our people in Iowa are working class people, and most people we know would have difficulty working productively from age 67 to 70. I think a better route to go would be to raise the cap on earnings that are subject to Social Security taxation. That alone would provide solvency for the Social Security Trust Fund.
In the 5th District of Iowa, the last statistics show about 80,000 registered Democrats compared to 130,000 Republicans registered, 105,000 independents. How do you unseat a Republican incumbent in a district that leans so heavily Republican?
Yeah, I think what you have to do is you have to go out and talk about what people's interests are. I think the bulk of the country is in the middle. If you look over in Europe, they've got a much broader political spectrum. You've got the folks that are on the extreme far right, the not so far right. There's folks that are more in the middle, left, and the very far left. I am much closer to most people's political philosophy, I think, in Western Iowa in the 5th District than what Mr. King is. Mr. King is on the extreme far right of his party, so much to the extent that he is even opposing Treasury tracks programs that go after criminal tax evasion. Mm-hmm. That is the fringe far right. I mean, it borders on the extremist far right, and that is not where the bulk of Iowa is.
Mr. Campbell, then, how do you square that with the fact that Representative King has been elected and reelected several times since taking office in 2002, if he is so out of sync with the 5th District?
A couple of things, really. One, you can get a job, and it takes a while for some people sometimes to recognize that there's some incompetence or unproductivity going on there. I think he rode the coattails of the district siding with President Bush on both war efforts. I differed with my party, or the bulk of my party, on that issue by being supportive of both of the efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think that was a particularly polarizing time in the history of our country. We're getting through that. It seems that combat operations have ceased in Iraq. We still have ongoing efforts in Afghanistan. So that's a stark contrast. I'm a different kind of Democrat. I see myself as a law and order, strong national security type Democrat. And plus, the world's a lot different than where it was in 2002 when he was first elected. I think this is, as I said before, this is a jobs election. People are very much looking at productivity and accountability. And if they're not seeing a good track record, they're very open to making a change. And the past candidates, Joyce Schulte and Rob Hubler are fantastic people. And for whatever reason, they didn't connect with the voters. I hope I'm doing a little bit better job of that. And both of them have been great advice to me in this campaign. And I like what I've been hearing on the ground. And there is a lot of fatigue in the public from the tone that is coming from the congressional office. And there are a lot of what I call reasonable Republicans or moderate Republicans that are tired of that tone from Representative King.
If you've just joined us, my guest for this half hour is Matt Campbell, a candidate for U.S. Congress, the Democratic Party nominee for Iowa's 5th Congressional District, running against Representative Steve King, Republican. You've accused Steve King of practicing McCarthyism. What do you have to back up that very strong charge?
If you read McCarthyism, the statement is making reckless charges with no substantiation. He was in Red Oak, Iowa, early this year and called the president a Marxist. And I think he's anything but. I think that's a false accusation. I think it's ridiculous that he's made the charge. I think the Iowa media really should have called him out on that. I think the leader of the GOP and Iowa was criticized for that. I have yet to see any criticism publicly of Mr. King of that.
In fact, we
I'd like to go back. Also, he's made that charge down in Red Oak, Iowa, earlier this year. He was also at the CPAC convention, and he stated that liberals and progressives are enemies of the state. Yet, not once in his speech did he mention Al Qaeda or the Taliban, and I think those are the two enemies of the state that we're currently at war with. So for him not to mention our true enemies is reprehensible. Beyond that, he was on Fox News earlier this year, right around the tax deadline, and there is a Treasury program that is out there that, in the aftermath of the UBS banking scandal this last year, goes after criminal tax evasion by super rich individuals that hide their money offshores. And for people that may remember this, this last year, the UBS, which is a Swiss bank, was forced to reveal the identity of thousands and thousands of bank account holders because an official had tipped off the Department of Justice that they were helping, the UBS bank was helping Americans evade taxes to the tune of $200 to $300 million a year, and that was over a 10-year period. So UBS, to get themselves out of the difficulties they were in, paid a whopping fine of $780 million. And I like to emphasize it's a pretty darn near close to a $1 billion fine that they paid to get out of hot water. And in my mind, the Treasury Department rightfully set up a program to go after the criminal tax evasion by the individuals that were perpetrating fraud against the United States government and the public. And Mr. King was on Fox News and said that he opposes the program, and he said it's going to squeeze the rich. Couldn't believe it when he said that. He's going to squeeze the rich. I'm wondering who he's representing. I want to represent the working class people of Iowa because I know how hard they pay work to pay their taxes. And he'd said that this was part of an anti-capitalist socialist administration. I'd like to know when going after taxes that are lawfully due became something that's socialist. And it shows how his rhetoric is exactly that. It has no bearing with reality whatsoever. And it shows how on the fringe he is.
A few weeks ago, Matt Campbell, you made news by interrupting Representative King's town hall meeting with a face-to-face challenge for him to debate you. Why do you believe Steve King has chosen not to debate not only you, but his other opponents over the years?
He's afraid that if I'm on the same stage with him, that people will see that I am extremely viable and capable of being a excellent representative from this district. He does not want to give me that forum because he wants to keep his job. And I think that's disappointing that a representative of the state does not want to debate the issues. I think that's one of the great things of American democracy. We have American democracy, not Chinese democracy, not Russian democracy. We have this great thing where people are supposed to be able to stand in a room and discuss their issues. And I think he owes it to the district, particularly since he has never publicly debated an opponent since being elected in 2002. If he has his way, he would go a decade before doing that. And I want folks to know that when I did approach him, I did that after introducing myself to him July 4th in Storm Lake at an Independence Day parade. He had a float that was four or five floats behind mine, and someone had asked whether I had never met him before. So I thought, well, I'll go over and introduce myself to him. And I shook his hand. I said, I'm your opponent in the race. I look forward to a healthy discussion on the issues. And he kind of grabbed my arm and spun me around and said, I don't appreciate being set up. And I said, I was really taken aback. I said, what are you talking about being set up? I just came over to introduce myself. And he said, no, you didn't. You came over to take a picture. I did have a photographer over there, but I didn't have any video crew with me. I didn't have a big posse of people to make some sort of spectacle out of the deal. I genuinely just wanted to introduce myself, which coincidentally is one of his preconditions that if people see the video of when I did challenge him to a public debate, he said I should have introduced myself to him. And I actually did do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, isn't it common, though, for incumbents of whatever party to avoid giving a debate platform to a lesser-known challenger purely for tactical reasons? And what's wrong with that if the constituents of the 5th District don't demand it?
I think it's a theft of a public right, and I was standing up for a number of constituents that have talked to me and said they're very upset about it. A lot of times your individual voter doesn't feel like they have a voice. I myself feel that most of us believe in America. We believe in the American process and the American system. And the majority of us know that what Steve King is doing is not right on that issue. And it serves the public interest to have a healthy discussion on the issues. I was at a Sioux City Journal editorial review, had a fantastic discussion with their review board. And it's that kind of discussion that we should be having in a public forum between the candidates.
If you've just joined us, Matt Campbell is my guest, the Democratic Party's nominee for Iowa's 5th Congressional District, running against Representative Steve King, Republican. And we want to mention also at this point that Representative King declined our invitation to be on Iowa Public Radio, to be on The Exchange. Matt Campbell, you are a graduate of the Georgetown University Law Center in Washington. Your expertise is in tax code. Should the Bush tax cuts be allowed to expire?
My position on this is I don't want to raise income taxes on any wage level whatsoever. But the public should be aware that piece of tax legislation is broader than just income tax or the effect on individual wage levels. It also is applicable to the state tax. It's applicable to a number of other different corporate provisions as well. So what I say is that my caveat is I don't want to raise taxes on any wage income level, but I do think we need to see a restoration of the estate tax at some level and eliminate some of these other corporate preferences that are contributing to our national deficit not being paid down. And with respect to estate taxes, I really do want to emphasize that the bulk of Iowans would not be subject to federal estate tax. Federal estate tax provides a generous exemption of $3.5 million. I'd like to see that made portable so that a married couple would have a $7 million exemption. I'd like to see a reduction of the estate tax back down to 40%.
Matt Campbell, discuss your vision for Social Security. You've called, I believe, for modifying the cap on which earnings are taxed for Social Security, right?
Yes, I have. And to go back to that point, Representative King and his crowd would like to either raise full retirement age to age 70 or reduce benefits because there is concern about solvency of the Social Security Trust Fund. I think a preferred means to provide for solvency is to, as I said earlier, as you alluded to, is to raise the cap on wages that are subject to Social Security taxation. Currently, wages above 100, I think it's roughly around $8,000, are not subject to Social Security taxation. I actually would introduce a donut hole and provide an exemption, make sure and keep that exemption in place for what people that make between $108,000 and $250,000, but have those that make wage income in excess of $250,000 be subject to Social Security taxation. And as I said before, that will largely take care of solvency of Social Security, the Social Security Trust Fund, and would preclude any need to raise full retirement age to age 70. And I think that that's important because working people would have difficulty working between those ages. And mm-hmm. I think it violates a promise that we've made to our seniors. You know, it's interesting to note, you know, full retirement age used to be 65. It's been raised to 66. It's already scheduled to be raised until age 67. I think 70 is too high. You know, France, another Western democracy in the world, had riots recently because they raised the Social Security or their equivalent program retirement age to age 62. That's from age 60, and that's in stark contrast to what we're looking at on our side. I also would fight efforts to privatize Social Security. I think if King and his crowd would have been successful in privatizing Social Security, that we'd have a lot of seniors in real serious world of hurt right now because their Social Security payments, so with the crash of the stock market in recent years due to their mismanagement of the economy, would have put payments right about 60 to 65% of what they would have been before. And I think a lot of seniors already are struggling for the fact that there hasn't been a cost of living adjustment this past year because inflation is reportedly as low as what it is.
Matt Campbell, one final issue I wanted to have you address. Your opponent has led the charge on the immigration debate, supporting the immigration laws in Arizona, for example. What is your stance on dealing with this problem of illegal immigration in this country?
Well, what I say is that I'm sworn as an attorney to enforce the laws, and I think we need to do a better job of that. I think two things would better enforce the laws. I support a mandatory e-verify system for employers. I think it should be as easy as taking our Social Security card out of our billfold that's like a credit card, and they swipe it through a machine, and that number gets verified as to whether it's legitimate or not. Now, if there's a duplicate somewhere, we know we've got a situation in our hands that needs to be resolved. That, and I also would increase the fines that are applicable to some of these bad actor employers out there that skirt the law and try and get around it. I think if we have a more aggressive fine schedules against employers that are hiring illegal aliens or undocumented workers, that problem will be reduced. I think part of the problems that we have right now with illegal immigration are due to the fact that comprehensive immigration reform did not get through Congress back in 2005. This was a piece of legislation that President Bush wanted to sign, but it was blocked by folks like Steve King in Congress. So I think that Mr. King, while he talks about it a lot, he has not accomplished much and really stands in the way of needed legislation to properly address the issue. And beyond that, I think he also uses the issue as a smokescreen for the fact that he has no growth plan for the district. You know, typically he'll do interviews and you know, inevitably jobs or economic development will come up, and he he will always steer the conversation back to immigration, and he uses a hot-button issue to focus attention away from his lack of productivity.
Matt Campbell is the Democratic Party's nominee for Iowa's 5th Congressional District, running against Republican incumbent Steve King. Matt Campbell, thank you very much for this conversation.
I appreciate the invitation and hope I get a chance to come back in the future. Thank you.
A conversation I had a few days ago with Matt Campbell, who is trying to unseat four-term Republican Congressman Steve King in Iowa's 5th District. We want to mention once again that Representative Steve King declined our invitation to be on this program. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available by going to iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions. Our email is theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.